Hello, and welcome back to the Video Essay Podcast. I'm your host, Will DeGravio, and today we have a very bittersweet show for you. This episode marks the final collaboration between the podcast and the fantastic Swiss website Film Explorer, which I'll begin right off the bat by saying you can learn more about at filmexplorer.ch. For the past several months, Film Explorer has presented their rotating video essay gallery, curated by Chloe Galibert-Lanay, Kevin B. Lee, and Ioannis Binotto. In this, their fifth and final exhibition of the gallery, they curate three works centered around the theme, re-inhabiting the image. The following discussion was recorded by Film Explorer to accompany the gallery and features Chloe, Kevin, and Ioannis talking about the works they curated. The episode description includes the following. A video essay can express a form of embodiment that does not require the image of the body. The last selection of video essays lets emerge sensuality where the sense of touching seems to prevail and challenge the image layer. Is this a way to re-inhabit the image? Does the haptic feature of film recall the physical dimension of early cinema? I'd like to extend a big thank you to the Film Explorer team, Giuseppe and Ruth, for this fantastic collaboration. And without further ado, here is a conversation centered on Exhibition 5 of Film Explorer's Video Essay Gallery, which you can view at filmexplorer.ch until the 30th of November. Enjoy.
Podcast. Video essay. Exhibition 5. Re-inhabiting the image. Ioannis Binotto. Chloe Galibert-Lanay. Kevin B. Lee. Production by Film Explorer.
So, it's wonderful, but also perhaps a bit bittersweet that we're having our fifth and final conversation around our last group of selections for the video essay gallery at Film Explorer. And the theme that we've designated for these last three video essays is image re-inhabitations, which some ways calls back to the first selection, which was titled Images of Home, Images at Home. And again, the question of the video essay's relationship to home, how we as video essay creators and enthusiasts feel at home with the video essay, what is the home of the video essay, where can it be found, in that the three works, to me, all reflect a simultaneous absence and presence, but at the same time are offering a really wonderful and varied and exciting set of strategies and creative approaches to describing, identifying, and making sense of how one relates to a sense of place or placelessness through moving images. So I'll just say a little bit on behalf of my selection, Nazar Bazi by Maryam Tafakori, who is an Iranian filmmaker based in the United Kingdom. And I know Maryam's work for some years now. I understand Nazar Bazi is somewhat related to her work as a doctoral student in the UK on Iranian cinema, and also this video essay that had been produced a couple of years ago called Irani Bag, where it's a really beautiful and lovely video essay that shows the politics of touch or not touching in Iranian cinema, how Iranian filmmakers have had to deal with the prohibition against showing men and women touching in any way, on screen. It's an ingenious video essay that pays tribute to how filmmakers have been able to create feelings of tactility just without literally having characters touch each other. And Nazarbazi takes that and expands into a much more complex set of dimensions and considerations. It was also made during the COVID pandemic. So there's this added layer, which I think is quite palpable, about living in a historical period where touch is more or less forbidden, conflated with a cultural background that has been very prohibitive. And here I can't help but want to acknowledge that what's going on as of this recording in Iran is really challenging, disrupting.
I'm like, I feel very seen by what you said about Mariam's film, also how you introduced this selection. It is also striking to me that in fact you picking the film by Mariam, it would have been a film that I would have wanted to pick, and it was kind of like great to see that you already picked it. So I also like the fact that the three of us, we seem even to kind of like to hand films over to each other. So that I think this whole exhibition series has been also like a process of getting in touch, because you mentioned kind of like also the topic of like touching as actually the topic, the theme also of Mariam's film Nazarbazi. And that is definitely also something that struck me or that touched me in regard to Elisabeth Brun's film Three Time Shapes of Home, a film that came to me in a kind of like in a sort of like detoured way, because I only late realized that actually it was being shown in film festivals. I came across it in the context of video essays that it was published in a journal called Screenworks. And I just had kind of like the feeling it is Elisabeth Brun, filmmaker, researcher, artist. She was also embedding this video in the context of a video as a research tool in how to make sense, how to look at landscapes at home and its shapes. And it definitely has all these merits, but what struck me so much is it was the fact that I rarely had this experience of seeing images which I felt like viscerally that they touched me. So it made me think about that the camera is perhaps not so much necessarily an optical device, but a device of touch. The feeling that like the lens or the image can literally like touch the things that it captures, but also can touch me when watching it. And this was just kind of like really striking for me, because if you are in a discussion of film theory and media theory, we are of course kind of like very used to kind of like to have like this distant look onto films. We're very quick with all these theoretical concepts and putting films into certain boxes, whereas this idea of like the film audience that is just kind of like struck by what they see, that is just like struck by, oh, this existed, what I see here in front of the camera, we would be trained to call that naive, right? That's a kind of like very naive way to view things. But with this film by Elisabeth, this was exactly what happened to me, that I just thought, wow, the water that she films, this really exists. The animals that I see, this really exists. Grass really exists. So I felt in a way kind of like almost kind of like as if I would have become a childlike viewer, a naive audience, that perhaps I've never even been as a child. So it was also in that relation a kind of like a re-inhabitation of home, or kind of like a return to something. I'm not yet fully, I don't have it yet fully developed, but a kind of like a sense of like to returning to some foundations of what film could be.
I sort of want to take it from there, because I really appreciate what you both just said. And on this topic of touch, or sort of going from that topic, I think something that struck me rewatching the three films back to back, that I had seen before, but seeing them really as a program, something that really struck me is how sensory they are, or sensual in a way, in ways that I think other films that we and video essays that we have curated were, but perhaps never with such a cohesive way in one program that we've made. And to me, this sense, it was really an affect that I felt watching the three videos, that they were very embodied, but in a way that was not centered on images of bodies, perhaps less so than earlier creations, that the selections we had made that were very much featuring human beings in the center of the image, be it of made of flesh or made of avatars, like in last selection. But I felt like it was embodied with maybe non-human presences. And specifically, it struck me, I think I might be mistaken, but I think all three films feature quite prominently water, waves, the sea, the ocean. And I think they all actually start with an image of the ocean, but that is what I have not checked. So I would need to, this is going off from my memory, and I actually sort of like that my mind made this connection that may not be accurate, and apologies for that if that is not. But I think there are images of wave in the three films, and quite central, meaningful and sometimes commented upon. It's the opening sequence of Room with a Coconut View that, the character wants a window that looks at the sea. And of course, it's very present. Images of water are really present in The Peak by Johannes, also that filming the water comes in different places. And specifically, I've been thinking about waves and the movement of the waves, and in relation to touch, like the sort of caress that the wave, does on the sand or on the beach or the rocks or whatever surface is close to the waters. And I think there's something, I'm not sure exactly what to make of it, but in connecting this image of the wave and the feeling of touch and the sensory quality of touch that we have been talking about, specifically also because Johannes, you were talking just now or you're touching upon the element of return of that is present in the sense of touch that you felt sort of sent you back in time to a real or fantasy childhood that is present in our title, in rehabiting the image, this idea of returning home or returning in the image. And I think this movement, the wave returns, right? It comes in cycles. And I think there is something about this movement of the wave that is very explicitly evoked in The Pig by Johannes in three times. I'm mixing up the title because it is exactly this one. I can type, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. That there is this the back and forth movement of traveling, right? Going away from home and back to home, away from home and back to home. Which I think is also very strikingly evoked in A Room with a Coconut View, when you have the actual sort of quote-unquote scientific explanation for how waves work. And this image is really, really imprinted in my mind now of having there's the surface movement that goes in one direction, like just under the wave, and the deep waters movement that goes the other way, if you remember, in this explanation that I do not know how accurate it is in terms of the science, but I like the image of it because it helps me think about different ways of touching, that there is the surface touch and the deep touch somehow. And that's something that's been really interesting to me also in training or discussions that I've been exploring recently that have nothing to do with the video essay, but with touch. So I'm going to talk about it nonetheless. But how when you touch yourself or someone, you know, touching the skin is a different type of movement than touching the flesh or touching the bone. I know those would be things that you learn if you train to be like a doctor that works with touch, or, you know, performing massage or any sort of body therapeutics. And I think this idea of surface touch and deep touch, for some reason, this has been something that was on my mind rewatching these three films and thinking about this idea of a cycle, or the wave that comes back and, you know, returns, and the motif of repetition that I think is very central to the three films, both as a visual strategy and as a narration strategy. And I was reminded also in Nazarbadze, you have moments of images coming back, you know, sort of, or the montage coming back to images that were seen before, sort of looking at them differently a second time, or insisting that something about image insists in the repetition. And it sort of made me want to expand from one sentence that is in the narration that I'm going to quote erroneously, because I don't remember exactly, but there is this question in the video that Johannes picked that asks whether everything is fluid, or are we all that fluid? And that really, to me, that really resonated with these three videos. And I find it really interesting that we identified the topic of home, our returning home, to this selection that's also so much about fluidity and the sort of the cycle of going away and coming back and going away again and coming back. I don't know if any of this resonates for any of you.
Yeah, it absolutely does. I love that you pointed out that the three works all seem to share a certain kind of multiplicity, or a sensitivity or an awareness to that sense making and experience is very much open to like more than one mode. I think that these three works somehow seem to be particularly sensitive to that, and modes that are seemingly contradictory, or that there are contradictory forces within modes of sensing. There's this one line in Nazarbazi that goes, where is the line between touching and being touched? And in order, there's another line that says, in order to show you where your desire is, it is enough to forbid it to you a little. So I find that this film, and I think all three films, are really sensitive to certain paradoxes of how we make sense, that in order to understand presence, you need absence. In order to experience touch or sensation through videos or video essays, there is this implicit virtualization of experience, where you're watching an image and you're feeling something through watching that image. And there's another line in Nazarbazi. I wrote all these down. I didn't memorize them, just so you know. when our eyes touch. So it's, you know, so again, this, I don't know if synesthesia is the right term, but, and to that point, you know, Chloe, you really, and both of you, Chloe and Johannes, you brought out all these different sensory dimensions. At the same time, these three videos seem so intellectually dense and thoroughly researched, and they certainly operate in the realm of information being conveyed. I think Room with the Coconut View, for example, it's structured as something like a conversation between, well, I think the characters are supposed to be AIs, or chatbots or something, who are talking to each other. One is a foreign tourist AI chatbot, and the other is a Thai chatbot. And their information, especially the tour guide, is based on a database form of knowledge. Like there's this opening sequence where the female AI tour guide is responding to a series of images on screen and saying, oh, this is that. And it's spoken like how an AI would be programmed to recognize images, like a CAPTCHA. So, which, you know, is kind of the least thing you would associate with such a glorious, sensual, or sensorially rich place like a resort in Thailand. But yeah, it and I think this video by Tulipop is incredibly sensitive to the contradictions of Thailand as a place that is, for him, very much a real place. You know, it's home for him, but at the same time, operates within the global tourism market as a destination, as a product to be consumed, and very much done so through images that operate in, you know, on the internet and through online media, as forms of data and knowledge to be consumed so as to facilitate further consumption in the tourism industry. And yeah, and thinking about the work by Elizabeth Brunn, Johannes, I noticed that, you know, this video, when you had proposed it, I looked it up and I found that it was situated on the ScreenWorks film. I think it's a film journal, an online film journal. And if you find it on that website, you'll find this research statement that accompanies the video, as well as two peer review statements. So I guess it's an academic work to some degree, but it's also one that's won awards at film festivals. So you may have more knowledge about this than I do, Johannes.
Not really. I just find it, of course, also kind of like interesting, these like that all these pieces also seem to be located in a in-between realm, or rather, this would kind of like link also to you two pointing out these paradoxes, kind of like being at least at two points at the same time constantly. Also, what you just said, it made me think about, I mean, in particular, in regard to A Room with a Coconut View, this paradox of concreteness and abstraction, that something can be at the same time so sensory concrete that we don't even consider it anymore as something that we see and have kind of like to process with our brains, but something that we feel like it's almost like inside our bodies, but that this is then kind of linked to all these images that are at the same time also like abstractions, obviously have run through computers and all that. It made me also think about also what you said, Chloe, about like these two aspects, repetition and touch. When I listened to you, it made me also realize that those two are perhaps like, perhaps not the only one, but certainly fundamental gestures of the video essay in a very reduced way, that I have a feeling of like repetition is perhaps, for me, I sometimes think is perhaps the first gesture of video essay anyway. Just the sheer point of kind of like, I show it to you once again. And the point that this was, of course, not necessarily the most common practice, because we would think of cinema as something you go to the cinema and then the film is over and it will take time until you can watch it again. It wasn't always like that. There were other times in cinemas where you could actually watch things in loop. But but that this is kind of like very much like a fundamental video essayistic gesture. I'm thinking here also of kind of like these early experiments of Alain Bergala, of kind of like just showing the same sequence over and over and over again, just to make us realize that actually there's something inexhaustible about the image. So just the sheer practice of, the sheer gesture of repetition seems for me kind of like highly video essayistic. And the other aspect of touch, and I also mean this in a very literal sense, that video essay practice was dependent on the fact that we could get hold of these images that we work with. And of course, we get hold of these images now mostly in a digital form. We do not necessarily have like a film copy on our table that we can work with, but it's still this idea. We have to grasp the material so that we can work with it. So I think in that regard, all these three films also, they seem to kind of like to return to kind of like very fundamental gestures of kind of like reflexive filmmaking or of video essayism, but at the same time they also point for me very strongly into kind of like a future, that this is kind of like still, that there's in these practices there's still kind of like the potential that you have a feeling that also cinema gets reinvented. And I find that in Mariam's film Nazabazi particularly striking, this how literally kind of like old material that is already kind of like that developed under situations of censorship, of impossibilities to certain things, how she manages that this becomes even more revolutionary than what could have been filmed before the revolution before the Cultural Revolution in Iran. The feeling that these images, and this has of course also to do with how she uses the soundtrack, they seem to burst with electricity. You feel like it's constantly touching me and my body, and not just kind of like with a hand, but it's kind of like an overall experience.
There are two points that I could follow up on that were really interesting to me. First, to the thing you both talked about, this paradox or the tension between the sensory and the intellectual element in the three videos, and specifically in A Room with a Coconut View, with the abstractedness of the AI speech and how the film nonetheless produces this sensory element. This is great because it gives me an opportunity to talk about why I picked that film. A, because I love it, but also B, in the specific context for this curation, because the five videos that I curated for the gallery were, I was interested in the theme of fatigue, exhaustion, relaxation, and the images that help and prevent relaxation and sleep, and maybe the images of sleep and dreams, or that can be produced through relaxation and sleep. And somehow this has been the through line of the five films. At least for me, they were connected through that through line. And in A Room with a Coconut View, specifically the sequence of the dream, the computer dreaming, that really stayed with me the first time I saw the film. This was the only thing I remembered from the film, was that sequence, because I loved it. And I thought it was so evocative and so weird and abstract in a way, but also very concrete in the way it, again, revisited the images we had seen before in a sort of rational, organized, you know, context, in a way that the information was transmitted, quote unquote, correctly. And suddenly it was represented again, but in a way that didn't make sense anymore. And just making these random connections and, you know, superpositions and layering of images with a much less rational editing strategy, because this was more, yeah, whatever the computer could have produced in terms of meaning, in a logic that would be the logic of the dream. And I think to me that is the sequence where perhaps this connection between the abstractedness of rational language, or binary language, if you want to think in terms of a computer, and the sensory embodied sensual dimension of the logic of the dream sort of collide in a way that I was really exhilarated about when I first saw it. And I think, yeah, I think this is, there's something in that sequence that sort of ideally encapsulated that I think can actually be found in other sequences from that film, but also in the two films that you had picked for today's selection. But the second point I wanted to talk about or respond to was something you said just now, Johannes, about the gesture of repetition as one of the most basic gestures of the video essay, and this idea that being able to repeat an image has something to do with getting a hold of it, sort of grasping it. And I like that this formulation, you know, taps into themes of control, like having, taking, being able to reproduce, which means, you know, and I think this connects to something that also struck me rewatching the three films in preparation for this conversation that I want to talk about, which was, and I think this relates to what you were saying, Kevin, also about how the way that they are intellectual, that there is a form, I think, of resistance to the capacity of editing and also verbal language to produce meanings. And this is something that I find in all three films. I think in the film by Elizabeth Brun, it's the way that, you know, there's a form of humor in the writing that sort of disrupts whatever, you know, rhetorical logic you would want to follow. It will break up in the middle. I'm like, I'm bored. I'm going to try something else. You know, the sort of like ruptures or moments of almost glitches in the narration that to me exemplify this, a form of distrust or resistance to a clear, unambiguous narration. And I think in Nazarbazi, for me at least as a spectator, the fragmentation of the sentences very much acted as a strategy to prevent me from grasping those sentences, because I felt like I needed to pause on every image to write it down, to actually read the text. But I decided not to, because I thought it was the experience was meant to be watched, you know, linearly. But as a result of that, I couldn't follow the text as if I had read it, you know, on paper, because my attention was diverted, you know, from the text to the image. And when I came back to the second part of the sentence, I don't remember the first part because the image has sort of created this shortcut in my brain. And I felt like that was a very powerful, very potent strategy that, you know, maybe seen elsewhere, but I think was really beautifully made in that instance of producing a text that does make sense and that does produce evocation and meanings, but presenting it in a way that is not assertive and, you know, owns the poetry in the delivery that's fragmented. And I think it's also present, this resistance to easy meanings is also very much present in A Room with a Coconut View, because the two AI, they don't understand one another. And they say that very often, you know, like whenever the male voice goes into more abstract thinking, the other voice is going to say, you know, I don't understand what you are saying or asking. And there is this permanent play of what information is transmitted and what part of the information is lost between the two speakers, which has to make you think about what you as a viewer do understand or don't understand and what is being transmitted to you. And I felt like this strategy of resistance to this easy, you know, meaning production was not only a through line in the films, but perhaps a different way of thinking about this idea of video essay as a way of getting hold of the image and like having and controlling. And maybe there's something to be said about, you know, touching in opposition to holding or taking, you know, thinking about, if you think about appropriation as a way to like grasp and take and have and control and do whatever you want with it, then maybe touch is a different way to be in contact with, but without, you know, the gesture of like actually grasping it.
And I think what you just said then also makes clear to us what there is to this Denkbild of the water that you also kind of like mentioned in all these three films, because of course water is precisely something that cannot be grasped but can be touched, and also when we think about that water, there's also an interesting paradox, and I think precisely also with this kind of like this view of the of just like the waves that come and go, that on the one hand you could argue, I've seen this image, I understand what it means, this is the ocean, the waves come and go, but only a stupid person would claim that they have actually seen what it is, because of course the point is, and we all know that from having this experience, that it is of course inexhaustible. It's literally impossible to kind of like to see what all the things that are happening, which also has kind of like then this whole issue about, I mean, we know that for in game designing, in digital designing, kind of like that waves and water is really hard to design because it takes a lot of, it uses a lot of storage, it uses a lot of kind of like processes, precisely because it is so multiple and complex, and it's never the same. The wave is constantly changing. I'm thinking here of like some late works by Harun Farocki, I think, in one of his videos about games. I think there is one section in which he talks about the animation, the digital animation of water, as being kind of like this ultimate task. So so I really like that. The kind of like arguing for to take what you said, Gloria, as a springboard to kind of like to argue for a video essayistic practice that is not so much claiming to grasp the film but to touch the film and to treat it more like water instead of something solid and containable.
Yeah, since you brought Farocki, there's another film by him, Images of the World and the Inscription of War, that begins in a wave measuring facility. So they're using science to measure the movements of waves. And as he's filming these experiments with his camera, the voiceover gets into this poetic reflection. I don't have the exact quote, but it's a poetic text about how the movement of the waves releases a streams of thought or something like this. And so it's brilliant how he, in just one sequence, is able to somehow make a connection between science and poetry with the wave as a central motif. So I think you're really onto something here. And it's true, like all three works that we've proposed feature water, right? I just looked at Nazarbazi again, and the first image I think in the film is image of water with a tree on fire on top of the water, which is a very, very strong poetic image. Chloe, I really like that you mentioned the underlying theme of all five of your selections. It's nice to be reminded of that, about I think it was digital fatigue and dreams mediated through a video essay. And it's nice to think that all three of these last selections each have a kind of dreamlike quality, a particularly strong dreamlike approach to how they work with images. So it's definitely not life without dreams. and I'll use this as also a way to recall my own curatorial proposition, and I also, you know, want to hear Johannes as well, because my curatorial proposition was Unvisible Traces. And what I was interested with the five videos that I chose was thinking about going beyond this kind of, shall we say, a pornography of videographic scholarship, where the thing that is being explained or being explored has to be shown explicitly on the screen, thinking about how video essays can come up with strategies of, well, on the one hand, not showing things in order to speak about them or reveal something about them, or also show the things that they do show reflect things that are not seen. So in the case of Nazarbazi, we see images of people not touching as a way of exposing this underlying censorship policy and the political situation that that enforced it. And with the other selections I made, Home When You Return, 1,000 Attempts to Be an Ocean, Michael Ironside and I, Transformation Scenario, they are all, to me, they're all images of things that are taking place off screen, images of algorithmic addiction in 1,000 Attempts to Be an Ocean, patriarchal control of bodies in Michael Ironside and I, and and technological transformations of how we relate to public spaces in Transformation Scenario. At the same time, it's also been interesting to see how the other works that both of you have proposed also fit this this theme that's been my primary concern, especially in both Room with the Coconut View and Three Times Shapes of Home. But Johannes, I'd love to hear more about what themes were driving your selections and how did it evolve over time, like waves?
I think what became more and more clear to me in the course of these exhibitions and of the conversations with you was that although I made my own choices with these films, but it was kind of like it was reshaped by seeing them kind of like in combination with your picks, and something that now got even more clear to me. I mean, I'm very interested in question of experimentation and also with the question of like the accidental of things happening. And I'm particularly interested in the accidental because I also think, and you already touched upon that, Kevin, this need that we have to, or perhaps we don't even have this need, but we are often forced to secure our positions. A video essay cannot just kind of like be the thing that it is, but it must also be clear, look, I've also read all these books. This is also a scientific piece and it has kind of like to obey certain standards. So highlighting the accidental seems to be a very subversive position, because of course it puts into question like notions of expertise, who is actually in charge, who has made this film. That was something that is kind of like I was very interested in relation to the last exhibition with Pan, Scan, Venkman, and who is the author of this effect that Cormac Donnelly shows us. Can it really be that it is a device that hasn't even authorial intent? And so that was also something that was driving me kind of like picking this the film by Léonce Perret as a video essay, which obviously it is not. It is kind of like made way before thinking about video essays even would have occurred to you. So there's something claiming that it is. I was claiming it is an accidental video essay then. How to Perform Teaching During a Pandemic, Spring Session 2020, Gender Studies, Rain and Cuts, is all about kind of like embracing and having to work through the accidental. And of course, also, I was talking and writing about like the accidents in the video note by my former student, Sara Cholic, on Hiroshima Mon Amour. But this highlighting the accidental does not take away from the value, but rather, and this now in today's conversation became now really clear to me, rather the accident is literally that in German we have this nice word of zustoßen, of something that hits you. The accident is precisely that which hits you. It's not kind of like put at the distance, but the accident is that which has an impact on you bodily. So this obsession that I have with kind of like the question of the body and how video essay practice is a bodily practice, but also how our bodily experience may change when making and watching video essays, I realize now this has very much to do with the accidental, with this letting go of control. So it also very much connects to what Chloe, what you said also about like these different forms of touch, that it's something else to touch the skin or the flesh or the bone. There are different forces, there are different tactilities, but it leaves an impact. Also, the feeling of like to imagine to go into the ocean and being touched by the water leaves an impact, an imprint, an accident on your body, even though it might be kind of like almost like imperceivable. And I have a feeling that particularly the three videos of this exhibition now, they seem to be able to trace this almost imperceptible impact of the tiny accident, the little moment. It's again, I'm thinking here, of course, of these images. You mentioned them, Kevin, in Mariam's film, of people not touching. But it's so much more extreme than an actual touch. There are these moments where kind of like just you almost feel the space of air between a hand and a face. And you wonder, I wonder if it would be kind of like possible to physically measure the impact that the movement of the hand in the air, because the air is then a little bit compressed, it would leave an imperceptible imprint on the face of the other person. And I just think video essays, but perhaps film in general, can be like a medium to make this imperceptible accident at least perceivable, not graspable, but perceivable.
Listening to the two of you now talk about your general themes and approaches and interests for your curation, and sort of thinking about what, I don't want to say portrait, but maybe what images or, you know, thoughts have been produced over the course of these months, you know, making and discussing this gallery together. Something that struck me just now listening to the two of you is how both in the themes and in the forms, and I think this is related, there is something to be said, I think, about how fragile the gestures that we've been, you know, curating and discussing have been, and the theme of fragility as a through line, perhaps. Because, you know, listening to you, Johannes, just now talk about the accident really made me, you know, I just sort of made me feel almost how this idea of the accident, even the small one, the small thing that happens, right? The brush of air when someone approaches to touch you, like how that is in itself, you know, it speaks to a very, you know, possibly small gesture, but also invites you to reflect on how sensitive or sensible you are to that. I'm mixing sensitive and sensible all the time in English, I'm not sure, but how receptive, or, you know, and the fact that you can be affected by such a small gesture, you know, sends you back to thinking about your own fragility. And how, yeah, the theme of the accident being, you know, a way to, I think when I connect this with the video essay, it really acts as a reminder for me in thinking about how fragile a practice it is in every way, both the fact that a lot of the editing gestures that we will try and you know, try out in our editing timeline, they tend to be very tentative, precisely, you know, very not definitive. We're like trying out something, may or may not produce something that makes sense. But there's also something inherently fragile in the whole, the infrastructures in which these videos are produced. Even the most, the ones that are very, you know, circulated and awarded, like the three we're discussing today, we're still very, you know, talking about very fragile works in a lot of ways, in the vulnerability that they display and in the not so so important support that they receive from institutions, be it, you know, production or distribution infrastructures. And of course, they are still, we didn't talk about that much because that was not a topic, but they are still very fragile works in with regards to copyright, you know, issues and the possibility of these works, you know, staying in circulation, not just having existed, but remaining available, is not something that we can take for granted. And I think it's been a topic for a number of us makers to maybe videos that we've shown widely or closely, you know, in the past years, we are now realizing that they're, the conditions for their circulation have changed over time, and some things that, you know, could be seen cannot be presented anymore. And I mean that those, there is something fragile about even the existence of these videos when you think about them in the long run. And I just thought about how also the themes that you were exploring, Kevin, this idea of what is absent from the image is also somehow tied, at least to me, resonates with this idea of a fragile gesture, or that's both about, yeah, what is fragile in the gesture of making an image of something abstract or something that cannot be filmed, but also, again, reminding the viewer of the fragility of their position when faced with such absent images in a way. And I think I'm also thinking about this because it was very present on my mind, thinking about my theme of sleep, because that is one of the most fragile states, something I've been, you know, writing about in my introductions to certain of the films. Like, this is such a state of vulnerability that even the smallest accident, to get back to Johanna's theme, you know, will disrupt and break the state of relaxation that maybe you would have, you know, been able to access. So I don't know, I just wanted to maybe create a loose link between some of these, or and yet another path to circulate among the 15 videos we've curated for the gallery, and thinking about the fragility both as a theme and as an really important, I think, aspect of our shared practice of the video essay.
Yeah, the fragility, and it's definitely not just a theme. It's a practical reality when it comes to the circulation of these films, both on video essay gallery and beyond. Because I'm now aware that none of my five selections will be available online, as far as I know. They were all password protected, or they're all, you know, represented by galleries or distributors. Whereas Johannes's five selections are all available on YouTube. And so actually, Giuseppe and Ruth, we could probably embed the videos back into the video essay gallery from where they're found elsewhere on the internet. And Chloe, I think you're about 50-50. So, so yeah, and it definitely raises questions about how much of what the availability and visibility of these works relates to questions of fragility, within the films themselves. Yeah, but it is really funny that, like, my theme of invisible traces has the five films that will be invisible on the video essay gallery. But also connecting this to the theme of touch, because thinking about how these video essays touch and how they, what kind of impact they may have going forward. I don't know if either of you have had any experiences presenting these videos to students or to workshops or to audiences. You know, I'm teaching a video essay course right now at my university, and I've been wondering about, you know, how I could teach these works, because they are really dense, really advanced, really sophisticated. I actually don't have film students. I have students in non-film backgrounds like marketing communications, and I'm already you know, having to explain a lot about what a video essay is within the context which I'm familiar and trying to relate it to their contexts, which certainly can be useful for them. But, you know, I think they're more used to explainer videos or things that have more of a marketing communications aspect. Not to say that they aren't open to poetry or, you know, things that aren't just like A plus B, one plus one equals two type formulations, but it is delicate and complex work to try to explain what's beautiful about these works that we've gathered. If only maybe just to teach something from a practical side, like how text appears on screen or how to do a compilation of footage. But anyway, I wonder if either of you have had experiences presenting or teaching these selections, and how would you go about it? If not, how would you go about it?
I mean, speaking to that and also picking up on the notion of fragility as proposed by Chloé, I was just kind of like recently rereading Jack Halberstam's book, The Queer Art of Failure. And this kind of like trying to make an argument for failure, for the provisional, and pointing out how that is actually also something political. I mean, Jack points out how queer people have been particularly good at failing, in the sense of like failing to kind of like to conform to certain rules, failing to be kind of like put into the according box, and making a point also about that perhaps, since we see how actually these, the right way to do it, the capitalist system as it functions, the longer that we see that it actually does not function, that this really fails, that perhaps failure could be kind of like a better strategy, or that just kind of like to go away from a certain understanding of what like correct use is. So coming to the question of like how to teach. And this is really, and also how to teach these videos and what can we learn from them. I experience with students that there is nothing they are more afraid of than failing. It's always this anxiety of what I do is not good enough. They make these really interesting things. Like I had the case with this video note by Sarah on Hiroshima on Amour. And then they're not sure, is this something worth? Because, oh, this happened really fast. Oh, this was all an accident. This wasn't really planned. All that. And sometimes I wonder, am I doing the idea of education a bad service by trying to enhance those experiences by telling them, no, this is really interesting what you did here. Will this become something that they think, oh, I don't need to learn anything? That's not my understanding. My idea is that I hope we can learn something else, because I do question more and more the way that we normally understand education. Again, as a kind of like this idea, you learn certain skills, and then when you have these skills, then you will be able to make your living and all that. But we are experiencing how this no longer works, right? You have all these skilled people, but they cannot make money out of that still. So something is wrong with this idea. So it is a challenge to kind of like to show videos like these that are perhaps not graspable, and also deliberately do not give you the feeling that you grasp what they are about. Also to teach videos that seem to them, to students sometimes as failures, in the sense of kind of like, well, but that is not a proper video essay, or, but the argument is not properly followed. There is a break in between, or they're even surprised when I kind of like present a film to them, and I would claim, look, I'm not even particularly fond of the whole film, but there are these and that moments that are really important for me. They think, well, but shouldn't it be kind of like either it's a masterpiece or it's nothing worth it. It's all kind of like I'm often experiencing these kind of like this want for very clear definitions and clear tasks and skills, and also the institution asks me of that. They want to know what are the skills that the students will have learned afterwards. But I'm very doubtful if this is actually the right path. And I realize I've been drawn to the video essay, and it's also those video essays speak to me that propose something else, not necessarily the contrary to that idea. That is still that would be too binary, but just like something else. that film could also be something else. That video essays could also be something else than what you first thought it could be.
I think it's an interesting question, and maybe a good way to wrap up this conversation, sort of concluding this ongoing conversation, because it taps into the question of what is this, you know, selection good for, or what could it become in the future? So I like that it's sort of opening these questions. But more to answer the question more specifically, I haven't been in a situation where I would teach these videos yet. I absolutely would teach any of them, I think. I would perhaps feel more comfortable teaching the ones that I've, you know, written about and that I've engaged more. But I wouldn't think that any of these videos is unteachable. I think the way that I would, you know, based on the little experience I've had teaching video essays and in the past, it's been my experience that when I perform my actual authentic excitement for a video, some students will respond to that. Maybe not all, you know, and that's fine. And I always say that it's fine as well. Like that, you know, if they don't get excited, they should say that and still participate in the debate, and that's legit. But, you know, because all of these videos are very honestly videos that I admire, and, you know, in each of them, there's something that I would want to defend and be like, look, this is not, and I would even say, I mean, I appreciate what you just said, Johannes, about failure and the possibility or the, you know, embracing the failure as a creative practice. But to me, they are all successes, and they're just brilliant in achieving something. And I think my task as a teacher would be to define what that is, what works for me, and be like, look at this. This is the challenge that I see in this video, and this is the way I think it solves it. And this is so good, you know, and I think if I manage to explain the challenge clearly enough, then they can see the video as the resolution of that challenge, and that provides a context. And I will also say that I think a number of these videos, you know, tap into themes that are relevant and interesting for, you know, students in different film students, but not just film students. Like several videos touch upon gender politics and questions of censorship and propaganda and questions related to technology and the future of technology and, you know, the development of artificial intelligence and avatar practices, which I realize is also something that's super relevant to students who have an active, you know, social media presence and that think about avatars and parasocial relationship a lot. Even one video is literally about online teaching. So how could it be, you know, more relevant to the experience of today's students? But then again, I think going back to a more like big picture, you know, consideration, I think this is a good question that we can also leave our listeners with in terms of what, you know, what can be done with this selection that we have now offered or, you know, prepared for other appropriations. And I know there are already plans for showing some of these videos in a, you know, movie theater context. Maybe that's something that we can announce now, or that would be announced on Film Explorer soon, I guess. And I think these, you know, this was one iteration of creating this base of 15 videos and creating, I think, many links and pathways to navigate from one to the other and going back and, you know, moving on again to a different video. But I also want to believe that other people and listeners and people and watchers online who might have discovered some of these videos at the occasion of this gallery will also, you know, appropriate some of the connections we've made and perhaps use it in their teaching or perhaps use them in other contexts. And I'm just curious to see where it all goes from there.
Yeah, you're right. I think this is a nice thing to wish for those listening and those who will have the chance to encounter these videos at Film Explorer Gallery and elsewhere. And I just want to say myself, I learned a lot from both of you in the works that you selected, and just the ideas and the passion and the enthusiasm that you brought behind your selections, and thinking about how they relate to me, you know, thinking about the significance of human states, bodily, mental, and dream states in your films, Chloe, and the significance of accidents, experiments, and failures, Johannes. And, you know, I see those qualities in my own selections now. And I think these are really wonderful values to wish for others and what they can appreciate in their viewing. So thanks for being part of this, and thanks for having me along as well. And I guess there will be other events in the future. I guess Film Explorer will announce them to our listeners and to audiences. So thanks, everyone.
Podcast. Video essay. Production by Film Explorer.